Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky. Mr. Cutlets was my pen name, and I'm here doing the Mr. Cutlets Show at the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting on Pirate Radio out of Roberta's wonderful restaurant in Bushwick, New York. And this is not just a pizzeria, but a real restaurant. I'm here with Stephanie Cohen.
Hello.
Stephanie is an ace reporter for one of our top New York tabloid newspapers. And a good friend, and we are sponsored by Fairway Market, which I'm very happy about because that's my, I think it's by far and away my favorite market, the best meat, best retail meat program anywhere, and their olive oil, I mean, selection is just, I mean, it would be worth going there if they had Sea Town products and that olive oil, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I wish I lived near one.
I know. You live in the East Village. It's hard that way.
There's no grocery stores.
Yeah, I know. That's
Seatown.
Seatown, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is on Avenue C.
It's true.
So, Steffi.
Josh, I feel like I haven't seen you in ages. Well, I don't know. Are you busy? What are you doing? What's going on with you?
Well, people have been asking me that. It's you know, I disappeared from the scene. I left City Search, and then like a lot of people have sent me the worried emails, and I think that the narrative from a lot of people, they think, oh, well, like now I've descended from my having absolute hegemony over the online food, you know, media at New York to then being like an increasingly marginal figure at City Search to now having been silenced entirely. But
what were the emails like? I mean, fear
no,
for their lives.
How are you? Are you okay? Can I help you? You know, like maybe you should use your English Nick said, mate, why don't you use your Twitter feed so people remember who you are? You know,
English Nick said, he's got a tongue on him.
No, he meant well.
He's got a mouth on him.
But you know what they don't realize is that, like, as Obi-Wan Kenobi told Darth Vader, he said, if you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine, Darth.
So what's what's happened?
There's four things. There's the most important one that's going on right now is Ozersky.tv. It's a big site.
Okay.
And it's going to be like it's going to be like a video a day. It's launching in the new year, and they're like my Grub Street and Feedback videos, but they're shot essentially by like movie cameras.
Okay.
It's beautifully edited and just a video a day, nothing else.
Where will you, where's the studio? Where will you be?
I'm going all over the place. And that's really, really going to be great. And then we have a whole model for like, it's me and Ben Leventhal from Eater. And we're going to have licensing and the content and so forth and have our own content.
And so how will you direct people to that?
It'll be at Ozersky.tv.
But how will people know about Ozersky.tv?
Well, because that video will be on other sites, either embedded or whatever. I don't know, Stefan.
Ben is handling all that.
I make the videos. Now, I'm writing a book about Colonel Sanders for the University of Texas Press.
Love it.
And
what is his story? Can you tell me a little?
Well, the Colonel was the Colonel is one of those archetypal American figures, and his life was very evocative of two different periods in American history, because he's very much a product of the 19th century, born in like whatever it is, like 1908 I think he may have been born in 1890. I think he was born in 1890, and you know, in the rural Indiana, which so for all intents and purposes was like being born in the Middle Ages. And then he was an old man. Like, the Colonel was 60 years old when he first started wearing the white suit for the first time. And the Colonel that we know, like, when Kentucky Fried Chicken became national and was bought and became a corporation, Like, he was already 75 years old.
See, I didn't even know there was a real colonel.
Well, that's right. People think that he's an icon.
Yeah, they think he's like an
Aunt Jemima or
an
something.
Yeah.
No. He was a real person. And his life and the story of his chicken is also very interesting. So I'm going to engage with that. And then I'm going to write a weekly column for a very well-known media organization that I can't announce yet, but it is a lot. It's not like City Search. It's like a real media, like an actual important media brand.
Ooh.
I hope that works out. I'm still working that one out. And then the other thing is there's something else big in the works that I can't talk about, but it doesn't involve print or radio or internet. That's all I can say. Or movies. Mm-hmm. I won't say what medium it
Burlesque.
Is.
Burlesque.
Yes! I'm going to be
You're
kittening.
You're going to be a stage kitten?
Yes. So that's what's going on. I hope that answers your question.
Well, now I know why I haven't seen you in a while.
I'm also writing my column for RachelRay.com. Every week that appears where I talk about cooking, as well as doing this show every Sunday from the Heritage Radio Network and various other projects. I'm pitching a story now, an Annals of Gastronomy piece to the New Yorker that they will reject soon.
What?
hopefully I can do it for somebody else.
What is it? Can you tell us?
No, because somebody else might hear it and do it, pitch it for themselves or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know, the things that get rejected from the New Yorker should fill
volume. They fill every other
libraries.
Magazine.
Yeah, exactly.
They fill other magazines.
Talk of the... Well, whatever. We don't discuss that.
What is it that we don't discuss?
Just, you know, the talk of the town pieces that people must send them that don't get... I mean, I think there was a website at one point of all the rejected talk. They're probably
brilliant.
Well,
that's what McSweeney's was originally conceived
as.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's so funny is how McSweeney's was conceived as a dumping ground for pieces that were, you know, didn't fit in or whatever. And it so quickly evolved into its own, like, exquisitely attuned, like, Mandarin, mordant, ironic, postmodern style that, like, if you were, like, a micrometer off either way, like, it's harder to probably get into that than it is the New Yorker. Or at least if you don't adopt their exact twee house style, you know?
Is it comparable to N plus one? I don't read N plus one, but I know your friend writes for them.
My friend Scott Hamra.
I never read N plus one. It looks pretty.
I never see a copy of it. You know, I don't feel like intellectually like I'm engaged the way I should be. I used to read The Baffler. You know, that was like my, you know, I'm an ardent
leftist. Is that porn?
Leftist. No. The porn I'm still, you know, engaged in plenty and not in the production aspect either. But the New York Review of Books had something. They had an article by Harold Bloom on Robert Crumb's genesis. Although apparently that's stupid. Like he never... Like, Bloom didn't even know who Robert Crumb was.
I wouldn't think that he would.
Well, I mean, he's such a great critic, but...
But not of middle brow.
Well, you would think he would be smart enough not to go around talking about things he doesn't know about. I mean, you don't hear me going around criticize a vegetable chef or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you stick with your topics.
I know what I know. You gotta. It's not enough to know something. You have to know what you know.
Is that the secret?
Well, apparently it is a secret. It's a secret to Harold Bloom.
It's true. You do have to know what you know, and you have to defer to experts when needed.
Well, right. And that's, you know, expertise is funny because the way you become an expert is by knowing that you don't know so you could know to talk to people that know. But on the other hand, the way you become an expert is telling everybody you are one. And that doesn't involve knowing anything at all. Well, Stephanie, I've been given the signal that there's only about a minute left. I hope that in the subsequent segments of this show, which also will have no guest, we can talk about something more interest than my own thoughts and inadequacies. I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlet Show. All the feeling that I have hiding here for you inside. You don't know how many times I've wished that I had told you. You don't know how many times I've wished that I could hold you. Someone who could cherish me as much as I cherish you. Perish is a word, but more than a blind. To the hope in my heart each time I realize.
seems to be the life that you could cherish as much as I do yours.
Well, I'm Mr. Cutlets, Josh Ozersky, here at the Heritage Radio Network at beautiful Roberta's Pizzeria and Restaurant. Really, it really trivializes this place to call it a pizzeria. It's so much more than that. But anyway, I'm here with Stephanie Cohen,
the Hello.
Newspaper reporter and my trusted co-host. And Stephanie...
Josh, I wanted to talk to you about my favorite restaurant in the world, which is I have to ask you this.
Oh, I thought you were trying to get me to guess if I knew what it was.
Oh, do you know my favorite restaurant in the entire world?
Is it in New York?
It's 6 feet away from my house, which helps it become my favorite restaurant, but that's not the only reason.
Barbone?
I do love Barbone, but no, next door.
What, that place that's next to you, that weird place?
Back 40.
Oh, Back 40. You love Back 40.
I love Back 40. I love Back 40.
That's what a local restaurant should... That's just what they should be doing, is making you happy.
They're so... Every meal is just fresh and delicious, and even like the vegetable dishes, which I know you're not a fan of. But they do have pork jowls, and they always give them
to
you.
I have only the highest regard for Peter Hoffman. Savoy is great. That place is great. But that's just the kind of thing that... You know, all that... So what Platt was calling Haute Barnyard and everything. Like... It's not really appropriate for, like, big restaurants like the Irving Mill or so forth.
Right.
Like, they're trying to do high-end food.
But Back 40 is small, and everything they make, they put so much effort and thought into. And
no,
I love it. Yeah, I love it. And the cocktails kick
ass. I still have never eaten the hamburger there, but...
Are you a grass-fed guy, though?
No, you know I don't believe in that.
You don't believe in it. The meat there is grass-fed. The steak's grass-fed. I just had it. I liked it, but yeah. I don't know what you would think.
I wouldn't like it, but I mean...
You've never met a grass-fed steak you like?
You know,
or a hamburger?
There's a man in, I think he's in Oregon or someplace like that, that wrote me an email. He heard me ranting about grass-fed meat, and he's a grass-breeder, a grass-fed cattleman.
He grows grass.
He's a cattleman who raises grass-fed cattle.
Yes, we understand.
And he said that if I would eat his meat...
That's what they all
I
say.
Would see. And in fact, I have eaten... No, I've never eaten an all grass. I've never eaten an all grass.
I don't think there is all grass.
There was Bill Curtis, the host of American Justice, had a ranch called Tall Grass that did okay meat. It was a comparable to like CAB choice meat at its very, very best.
But you just can't reproduce that, what do you call it? Mouthfeel.
I mean, you can't.
You just can't get it without the corn.
I mean, it's like making a milkshake with soy milk. Like, soy milk's terrific. It's better for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's better for the environment, you know, unless you're a soy.
I mean, the thing is, though, it does have more flavor. It's just not as tender. It does have more flavor.
Well, it has more bad flavor. Like, I don't mean to say bad. What didn't I? I thought in our pre-interview, I said that I didn't want to go over this again because everyone's sick of hearing me talk about it.
Well, I wanted to mention this. So Back 40 is my spot. And they're doing this class now, which I think is really funny. It was packed. You could not get a seat in it for like however much money. It wasn't very expensive. It was learning how to cook a whole hog. And I just thought that is a weird trend to be hitting in New York right now. And I thought, who better to ask about it than you?
I mean, it's a... People like it because it's kind of a freak show. It's very dramatic.
Right.
The whole hog aspect. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? The ceremonial aspect of it. But for one thing, first of all, there's three problems with whole hog cooking.
I don't think you actually, okay, you go ahead.
Do you mind if I go ahead?
You can speak, but I just don't think you actually can do it in your backyard. I think you need to.
No, well, but if you're curious, I'm happy to answer the question.
Oh, now he's getting a little testy with me.
Well, you're all right. Is it all right?
Do you
right
want to argue more? I will.
You know, it's funny. We've never actually gone out. We've never been a couple, but it's like we're a couple. Now, Stephanie, to answer your question, which, by the way, I didn't think about until this very moment, but it struck me at once that there were three problems with whole hog cookery. One is that the size of the whole hog that can be manageably cooked by any but a well-trained and equipped professional is very small. generally speaking, you're talking about a suckling pig or a piglet, porker, at most a porcelet. And those are animals that generally don't have a lot of flavor. They're small, immature animals. There's little in the way of fat, which means there's little in the way of flavor. It's basically just veal shaped like a pig, or even really tofu shaped like a pig.
That's disgusting.
People like it because they have the crispy skin, but the crispy skin is the only thing that tastes like anything, and it only tastes like something because of the salt or whatever you rub on it.
Okay.
Second of all, a pig is a hard thing to cook whole because, as with a turkey or any whole animal, there's a lot of different muscle groups connected to different size bones that represent different kinds of heat sinks that control different thermal reactions. Yep. So
you'll get
some dark
of
meat becomes juicy only when the dry meat is overcooked. Like you're always looking to keep the loin moist while you cook the arms and the legs. It's a big pain in the ass. And third of all is what you said. Like, you're not going to, it's very hard to put it in the oven. What people can do who have a backyard or access to green space, or even sometimes a terrace or rooftop, is they get what they call the cajachina, which is a wooden box that, you know, is very popular for this kind of thing. It's cheap and it's fun. Essentially it's a wooden box with a metal top, and you shovel hot coals onto the top of it. And what people don't know about it is that it's not just that you're cooking it in a box, which would be the same as cooking it in an oven, but it's actually a pressure cooker.
Okay.
Because it doesn't allow any of the air or moisture out. And so,
how's the product?
Well, the product is wonderfully crispy. It cooks very fast, very hot. Solves a lot of the problems I mentioned in the second point. But on the other hand, the zero smoke you get from it. So you might as well be cooking it in an oven in that sense. And then, you know, like I said, it's still like a fatless, immature animal. And it's a big, disgusting mess, you know. And
it does have a lore, though. But, you know, remember when we went to Fergus Fest?
Yeah.
And we were talking about how do you get the head to look like that? I mean, how do they get that skin? He has a trick that he does.
The trick is that he's a master that spent his entire life.
But he puts it back in the oven or fries it or something. That's what they were telling us. I can't remember.
Well, people do a lot of things with that, especially a lot of the stuff in the head. That there's so much gelatin and collagen and cartilage in the head that you can't really just pop it out of the oven and eat it. Like, you can eat the meat. Like, if there's a pig comes out of the oven, you could reach under the skin if you have, you know, the gumption to do so, and pull out the jowls, and that's very tender and delicious and flavorful. But, like, actually eating the ears and stuff, like, the best ears are April's. All due respect to Fergus Henderson, the best I ever had was April Bloomfield's, and April fries them, and she does something else. Like, she's like a Chinese chef that way. She never wants to tell you, like, just what she's doing, you know, but she does something that makes them crispy and delicious.
You know where we've strayed from?
Well, I don't know, but if we have strayed from something and have to come back around to it, we should do so after.
There's something important we're forgetting.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't surprise me. All right. Well, let's come back after the break. I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Kicking an old cafe. Never slept with a dream before you had to go away. There's a bell in the tower Uncle Ray brought around. Don't worry about the army in the cold, cold ground. Cold, cold ground. Cold, cold ground. Cold, cold ground. Now don't be a crybaby. There's wood in the shed. There's a bird in the chimney and a stone in my bed. When the road's washed out, we pass the bottle around and wait in the arms of the cold, cold ground. The cold, cold ground. The cold, cold ground. The cold, cold ground. I'll swing rope. In a briar patch of berries taking over the slope. The cattle sleep in the mailbox and we'll never go to town till we bury every dream in the cold, cold ground. In the cold, cold ground. The cold, cold ground. In the cold, cold ground.
Hi, this is Stephanie Cohen. I'm here on the Heritage Radio Network, co-hosting the Mr. Cutlet Show.
That's right.
With Josh Ozersky.
That's right.
He's given me the special honor of introducing our guest.
Well, we do have a guest here. We were going to... There was a couple of things
he
we wanted to...
He took back the honor.
No, I want you to do it, but... Well, you don't know her last name anyway.
I don't know her first name.
Oh, do
Sarah.
It. This is Sarah O'Brightus.
Or not so brightest.
She is the she is the beautiful co-director of Heritage Foods, that is, who is the heritage of Heritage Radio Network. They sell beautiful sort of endangered species type animals to restaurants, and we eat them.
Josh. My friend, can I interrupt you again? My friend, my Facebook friend, is becoming a real live homesteader. He's freaking out. Graham, if he's listening. He started with like a little vegetable garden out. He has a house out at the beach.
Well, wait, before I answer that question, Stephanie.
I'm sure she was headed somewhere.
I don't think she was headed in your direction though, Sarah. I just wanted to.
We had this all rehearsed before the show, and now Josh is throwing me off.
It's better if it's not rehearsed anyway. You know, Marlon Brando used to write. He didn't learn his lines. He would write the script. He would write the lines on Post-it notes and stick them to the other actors. So that it was a thing, because that way he wouldn't know what he was supposed to say until he said it, because he felt that there was a...
Post-it on Sarah.
Well...
So if your t-shirt was a Post-it note... I'd be reading Life in a Blender.
That's right. Life in a Blender is the brilliant band led by Don Ralph that wrote and performs my theme song, Sarah.
You were so lucky to get that.
It's not luck. I mean, it is luck. I'm very lucky.
That is it's a good song.
It's very... It's great. What I meant by it's not luck, it's Don is so brilliant.
But they wrote a whole song for you.
Well, I am lucky. I've been lucky in a lot of ways. Now, Sarah... Before we touch on this business of homesteading, which I know nothing about, you are this is airing a week after Thanksgiving, so people will they still be able to get the meat pies like the one you're giving me now?
Yes, sir. We did this as a sort of we made meat pies, guys, and they're called tortillas tortier without the S at the end, in Quebec, and it's a Quebecois tradition to make these meat pies around Christmas and New Year's. So, we'll be making them through December, And the we is me, because I was coming into contact with so much meat in the Heritage office, and we didn't want it to go bad, so we made these awesome meat fillings.
There was guinea hen.
Yeah, there's
beef.
There's variety of meats, any combination of, brisket, guinea hen, turkey. What was the...
Do you have any...
Venison, and we have... one or two for you to choose.
And I bet there's like a nice lardy crust around it.
Yeah, you know, my guy, Oog, who was a chef at a restaurant, pretty cool restaurant in Montreal called Au Pied de Cochon, they make hundreds and hundreds of these meat pies every year. And he is adamant against the lard. So it's just butter, you know, and
butter's
flour
good too.
And a little agua.
I have to eat it to decide, but this Oog, I mean, I'm... His name is Ugam. It sounds like he would hit me with a rock or something. You
know, but his last name is Dufour, which literally means from the oven. So that's pretty cute.
That is pretty cool. Now, I'm going to shut you down, Sarah, now, because as much as I appreciate your meat pies, there's other topics
we
need to talk
and,
about.
Yeah, define homesteading.
Well, so as I was saying, my friend, his Facebook updates are all obsessively about, not obsessively, but I think it's really cute. He's pickling things now, and he is, I mean, this garden is going just beautifully, it was. And so now he had to, you know, can everything for the winter. And I think if he had his druthers, he would not leave his property. And I know, I just know that's this new, I don't know.
Where is he
like
doing this?
Out on Shelter Island. But I feel like this place is sort of that in that vein.
That's a very big thing here. They have a, you know, where we are now, where we are sitting in this shipping container, where what was a shipping container is. Are you taking off, Sarah? I'll see you outside.
Do you mind? Yeah.
No, we'll see. We'll all have a calzone.
Bye,
together.
Sarah.
Now, this was a shipping container, and on top of where we're sitting now, they grow all the vegetables for the restaurant.
Really?
Yes, and they did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they had a big benefit here with Joe Bastianich, and it was all to raise money for this elaborate program that Roberta's is involved in, of having rooftop gardens all over the city.
I would love that. Because and
It's good for everything.
It's good for everything.
You know, and
there can't be an argument against that.
No, there's no argument against it. And it also, you know, I mean, like, listen, I'll tell you a little dirty secret in the restaurant business,
what?
All right?
What is it?
Not all the vegetables that you buy in the green market are actually from the farms.
No,
I may be wrong. I don't want to get sued or whatever, but I just have heard it said by people in a position to know that some less than scrupulous green market vendors
love it.
Stop at the Sea Town on the way, or maybe not Sea. Like maybe they go like to
scandalous,
like a Publix or something. Well, I'm not saying it's true of the Union Square Green Market, but you know, maybe like if there was a, you know, if there was like one on the Bowery Green Market or something would have it. Like
the infamous Bowery Green Market.
Generally, I'm you know,
but rooftop gardens, it's better for the air.
Steffi, the truth is, I'm really not the one to be asking about.
I know what you need to talk about. I know what the burning question of the hour is.
What is?
You know what we haven't talked about, and that I just know is really it's in your kishkas. You got to get it out. You got to say it. What's going on with hamburgers?
you know, Steffi, that is a topic that was always near to my heart.
I knew it.
You know, I mean, this is such a golden age of the hamburger. You know, I went around with Nick Solaris in North Jersey. What essentially is happening now is there's a recrudescence of this particular technique of hamburger smashing. And the hamburger, like you take a hamburger and you press it on the grill when it first goes down and becomes nice and flat. You get a lot of brown, crusty surface and a minimum of interior. And that's different than the big, bloody,
juicy. That's
Steak
and Shake.
Well, Steak and Shake. Well, it is. That's
Which
very
is
insightful.
The best burger.
Well, you know what? I'm with you 100%.
I
love Steak
I
and Shake, and Danny Meyer loves it too. Danny Meyer made Shake Shack as a tribute to Steak and Shake.
Ugh.
But in fact, the biggest burger chain in the West Coast is the fastest growing is one called Smash Burger.
Okay.
And the biggest one on the East Coast is called Five Guys, which is the exact same hamburger.
Oh.
And now Bill's opened up in the
so it's all it's all that district. Crispy part.
It's all about the. It's like I was saying in the last show, how the potato gratin, everybody wants the crusty part on the top of the potato gratin. Everyone wants the meat, or if they're like me, they like
they want it crispy.
Yeah, especially the interplay between the soft yellow cheese and the crusty brown surface. But with Bill's, they're using the Lafreda meat. The Shake Shack does too. The Shake Shack and Bill's are both great, but
they have to cook it in a lot of butter to get that crispy.
I don't
crispy,
think they do. I think when you're cooking burgers on a grill all day, there's no shortage of beef grease to cook it on. And then they got this other one there called the Fat Cat.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I actually gained 6 pounds from eating Fat Cats.
That's disgusting.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, Stephanie, like,
disgusting.
It's very good.
But
I mean, I don't
eat.
I didn't get it all in a day. I mean, I'm just saying, like, or maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was like 2 pounds, whatever it was. Like, I was noticeably fatter. Like, I got. The last 2.5 weeks that I worked at City Search, like Bill's was like a block away from me. So
thank
I was going
God
there.
Thank
like
God you
day.
Left there.
But like
for your health.
You know what? It is unhealthy, but like, and as great as the regular Bill's burger is, this Fat Cat hamburger now, this Fat Cat, what they call the Fat Cat, is like.
I guess they named it that way for
two,
a reason.
It's two of these little burgers pressed super flat. And two slices of cheese and all these buttery caramelized onions on a crispy English muffin. And everything about it, I should object to.
Yeah,
I
you don't
be,
like the English
no,
muffin.
No, I don't like an English muffin. I don't like double patties. Like, I'm against this. I'm against that. It's so freaking good.
You gained 6 pounds.
Well, I'm going on the shake diet.
You after are
the,
not.
Yeah, the day
that's
after.
The steak and shake.
No, I'm going to go on it. I
you
know
will last.
No, I am
going to.
That's not true. I can be rigidly abstemious.
Bullshit.
I just can't be moderate in my habits.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, let's go in and have our guanciale calzone now. I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is Stephanie Cohen, and this was the Mr. Cutlet Show.
Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop with the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets. Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me.